Welcome to Elite Wrestling Radio. I'm Hotshot Danny Duggan, and we are back with our weekly podcast series. And so much has gone on in the last week of Canadian Wrestling's Elite. I feel like I'm going to need a whole interview section myself just to talk about everything that is happening in the world of CWE. The biggest of announcements coming late last week, Lita is coming to Canadian Wrestling's Elite Friday, June 27th. Perhaps one of the biggest names, if not the biggest name, to come to Canadian Wrestling's Elite in its five-year history, and we've had dozens and dozens of former WWE stars come through our doors, but I don't think anyone has created such excitement as Lita has with that announcement last week. She'll be coming here, a part of Sparks Productions autograph session between 4 and 7 p.m. that day. Go to cwecanada.ca to see how you can get in on that autograph session. And then later that night, she will make a very special appearance, a part of her CWE debut on the actual live event itself. So some big things coming down the pike. We got Chris Hero coming for the May tour. We got Lita coming in June. We've got the Mighty Midgets coming in July. All kinds of wild, wacky, and crazy is going on at Canadian Wrestling's Elite. It is a wonderful time to be a wrestling fan in the province of Manitoba. We just had an event this past Friday. We returned to Transcona and Rookie Sports Bar with a great card. It was called Good Friday, Great Wrestling, and there's definitely some great wrestling to be had. What went down, you ask? In the opening contest, Stefan Epic defeated Adam Race. In his first appearance, a part of a CWE event at Rookie Sports Bar, the former CWE champion, the Zombie Hunter Mentolo, defeated the first All-Star Brian Rich. Myself, Hotshot Danny Duggan, pinned the German juggernaut Moses Luke. The mastermind Kevin Cannon defeated the social media specialist Tyler James. And in a barroom brawl, Dick Blood defeated the misfit Mike Mission. And in a 45-minute, 8-man elimination tag match main event, Mentolo was the sole survivor of his team that consisted of myself, Brian Rich, and Dick Blood, taking on the team of Moses Luke, Misfit Mike Mission, Kevin Cannon, and Adam Race. We're going to be back in Transcona and at Rookie Sports Bar on Friday, June 20th. That's just 1 week before the big Lita event, so all our stars will be on hand getting geared up for what's going to be one of the biggest shows of the year. But before we jump ahead, we're getting a little ahead of ourselves here. We got a big tour just a couple weeks away, and announcements have been coming, multiple of them, on a daily basis as we get ready for the last Action Hero Tour. 6 shows in 6 days. We're going to be in Morden May 6th, May 7th in Souris, the 8th in Neepawa, 9th in Winnipeg, the 10th in Selkirk, and we wrap up the tour with a special daytime event on May 11th in Beauséjour. The big announcement coming out of this tour is going to be the first ever Elite 8 tournament. It's going to be a tournament spanning 4 of the 6 days of the tour. 16 men are going to be given the chance to qualify for the inaugural Elite 8 tournament. Qualifying matches are going to take place in Souris and in Morden. And then the quarterfinal matches, some will take place in Souris, the remainder in Neepawa. And then the semifinals and finals of the tournament will take place May 9th in Winnipeg. 16 men have been selected. Some of those matches include Chris Hero in what will be his first ever match in Western Canada. Will be looking to qualify for the Elite 8 as he takes on 123 approved .ca TV champion A-list Anderson Tyson Moore. So there's two men that very well could be in the finals of that tournament. They're going to be squaring off in the qualifying round to see who deserves an opportunity to even be in that tournament. Some other qualifying matches include Jethro Hogg versus Sigmund. Jason Kincaid, The Gift, returning from West Virginia to take on former CWE Tag Team Champion Kevy Chevy. Anthony Wayne in his CWE debut, taking on Tyler Colton. The Mohican Sun, Jess Youngblood, will take on the mastermind Kevin Cannon. Kamikaze will take on the Rebel Bobby Collins. The Zombie Hunter Mentolo will square off with Ricky Starks, who will be making his Canadian Wrestling's Elite debut. He's coming in from the great state of Texas for his first Canadian tour. And Mr. Incredible will take on the first All-Star Brian Rich. So those 16 men are going to compete for the 8 spots in the inaugural Elite 8 tournament. And two of those men will make it to the finals. They'll make it to the main event of the Winnipeg show on May 9th to crown the first ever Elite 8 winner. Some other big matches have been announced. Some interesting matches have been announced in the last couple days. One of those involving myself. I'm going to be doing battle with a radio DJ of all people in Souris, Manitoba on May 8th. I was on a Westman Region radio program last week, being interviewed by a man named RJ Lilly of their afternoon program, and he had some not so nice words to say about the professional wrestling industry that I took exception to. And after a few heated words and a heated exchange that took place, we came to an arrangement that in Souris, Manitoba, on May 7th, he's going to step in the ring to see if he can do what us professionals do on a regular basis. He seems to believe that anyone can get in the ring and do what we do and do it at a high level. And quite clearly to anyone with a brain, that's not the case. And he's going to learn out the hard way May 7th in Souris, Manitoba. Some other big matches that have been announced. Heavy Metal, the brand new CWE champion, is going to be put right to the test. Two big title defenses have been announced for him so far, and there's going to be more. In Neepawa on May 8th, he's going to defend that CWE championship against Ring of Honor star Chris Hero. So he's going to be fed to the wolves right out the gate and be put to the test and have to show he deserves to hold that championship, which has been held by some great competitors who have beaten some great, great talent to hold and win that championship. So he's going to be put to the test in Neepawa. If he survives that, he's going to defend the championship against a former CWE champion, Bring the Pain, Matt Fairlane, in Winnipeg on May 9th. Matt Fairlane was never granted a rematch after losing the championship at the 4th anniversary show against Robbie Royce, as he ended up taking a sabbatical from professional wrestling shortly after losing the title and his rematch clause expired by the time he returned to action. But he's gone about it the old-fashioned way, and he's been working hard and earning victories since returning in August, and recently defeated the Masterpiece Chris Masters in Selkirk, giving Chris Masters his only loss while here in CWE, and now will be rewarded with a championship opportunity in Winnipeg. Matt Fairlane looks to become only the second person to hold a CWE championship twice. And that's not all for Heavy Metal. If he's a champion or not, it's going to be another question, but he will be in tag team action in Selkirk as he teams with the Canadian Crusher AJ Sanchez to do battle with myself and Chris Hero. So they're going to get familiar with each other in Neepawa. Chris Hero very well may take the championship from him in Neepawa, but the four of us are going to get together, and we're going to do some wrestling in Selkirk, Manitoba on May 10th. When I challenged Heavy Metal for the title, the day after he won it in February, our match didn't get too far before AJ Sanchez stuck his nose in the match, and the match was thrown out. So I got myself some backup, and it's one hell of a man to have in your corner, and we're going to go to battle in Selkirk May 10th. Matches by the day are going to be announced leading up to the Last Action Hero Tour. So go to our website, cwecanada.ca, or join us on Facebook under CWE Wrestling for our group page or Canadian Wrestling's Elite for our fan page, and follow all the announcements as they come day by day and the rest of these cards start to fill out. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to have a former two-time 1-2-3 approved .ca Open Rules champion on the line, the German juggernaut Moses Luke. Stick with us. And we're back on the line, and on the line is the German juggernaut Moses Luke. Moses, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me out today, bud.
Yes, I'm very excited to have you on the program, as your career now is spanning 16-plus years, so you've worked with just about everybody, you've worked for everybody. Anyone that's come through Manitoba Wrestling in the last decade and a half, you've encountered at some point or another, so I'm very interested to get your perspective and thoughts on many individuals.
Sounds like a plan, Danny.
Let's go back in time. You started in 1998. That seems like a long, long time ago. How'd you get your start in professional wrestling?
My professional wrestling, I guess, all started back when, I was in high school. I met up with Matt Fairlane and his brother. We all went to the same school. They started off BSW as their independent promotion coming out of Selkirk. And myself, the Big O, and Ronnie Attitude, we all kind of went down there, started doing some training with these guys, and I guess literally got the first foot in the door at that point in time.
And what did training consist of with the Fairlane boys?
Well, judging that there was no real ring to train in most of the time, a lot of gym mats and stuff, so you're learning to bump on the harder surface as opposed to the softer ring, but actually I appreciate that in the end. No. A lot of the basics, nothing too fancy at first, at least not until I came back and did some more training later on.
Now, the Fairlanes at the time, you know, had a little bit of controversy and heat surrounding them because they kind of broke into the business on their own, started their own operation out in Selkirk. When you were training with the Fairlanes, did they already partake in some qualified training through Candelo at that point, or is that before their stint with Candelo?
That would be literally right after their stint with Candelo. That was right after they received training and so forth out there.
So they just learned their training and they turned around and started training guys themselves.
Pretty much spreading the knowledge.
So how soon after your training with the Fairlanes were you in the ring and doing this professionally?
I'd say we were probably at it for a good 6 months before we actually got into a ring for their inaugural show, I guess.
And what kind of memories do you have of that first show for Body Slam Wrestling?
For me, it was kind of interesting because it would have been my first time in a real ring. So setting up, watching Bimbo and his buddy there for Tony set up the ring. And this is Tony's big 20-foot ring. So like first time as you're younger, it's kind of a bit of an awe because it's just like, okay, cool. I finally get to go in and do this stuff. But yeah, I was pretty excited. I'll tell you that much.
So you're working with Body Slam Wrestling. Where did you venture off to next? What was the next destination on the Moses Luke roadmap?
Next destination on the Moses Luke roadmap was probably when we were doing a show out in East Selkirk. I remember I think it was Vance Nevada, Adam Knight, and Steve Stryker were sitting in the audience pretty much trying to pick out recruits to come bring them into the city to come train at the CWF Academy. And myself, Ronnie, and the Big O all got kind of picked up and brought in. So the next step up was another round of training through the CWF Academy.
And who was running the Academy at the time?
Vance was running the Academy at the time. There was Brian Bailey from Saskatoon was in a fair bit at that point in time. So he was helping out a good chunk there too.
Tell us about your first meeting and encounter with the Big Kahuna Ernie Todd.
Encounter with Ernie Todd. I think probably the first time when we actually had any sort of longer interaction was probably when he was watching the training class when we were doing our amateur like drill kind of stuff, just shooting around in the ring. And well, as a lot of the guys have seen, he gets kind of excited when a lot of that's going around in the ring because he always wants to crawl in there and show off his quote unquote superior grappling skills, right?
Did you get in the ring and grapple with Ernie?
It was a brief round, yeah.
And who went over?
It was a quick pin on my behalf. I had some amateur background from before, so.
So you probably had heat. You probably had heat with Ernie right off the start.
You know, maybe that's why I wasn't over there a lot at the beginning. Eh?
So did you end up doing shows for the CWF following your training with them?
Actually, what ended up happening is probably about a week before I was supposed to make my debut in the CWF. A ring that wasn't set up properly and Ernie's canvas was loose, caught my ankle, and I snapped it in half. So I was on the shelf for a little bit after that.
Who knows what your career would have become if you would have, you know, stuck it out and started with the Canadian Wrestling Federation?
It probably would have been a bit of a different direction. I know, I remember the first match that I was supposed to be, because it was supposed to be myself and Charlie Hayes out of Saskatchewan working the Damage Inc. boys.
So you broke your ankle. You never made it to your debut. How long were you on the shelf before you got back in the ring and started working again?
When I started coming back again was probably the following year when I came back for River City Wrestling in 99.
And how did you go from being a student at the CWF Academy to getting back in the ring but with River City Wrestling?
Pretty much came out because I got a phone call from the Big O, who many know he's friend of mine from when we were young, so we're in touch a fair bit, and calls me up and says that he needs an opponent so he can have a match on the card at this upcoming Chalmers show. And he's like, come on down here, they want to evaluate you, see what you can do, and then we'll go from there. I'm like, well, okay, whatever. So I jump in my car, I drive into the city, I come down to the infamous shack on Sutherland, which is a creepy place to start to drive up to you for your first time, I'll tell you that. Get in the ring, do a quick 5-minute match with the Big O, and wait for the critics to kind of critique me, which at the time happened to be, I believe Mike Davidson was out there, Dirty Dick Walker, Wayne, And I think Saxon was there as well. And they were all kind of milling around, but seemed to all be pretty happy with me right off the hop.
So you passed your test, so to speak. So that would begin your career with River City Wrestling. What are some of your initial memories of that crew that started off? Because in 1999, for those not familiar with it, it was essentially a group of young guys just getting their break in the business that were training through Stan Saxon and a combination of students that were training through Don Callis. So it was a very, very green crew right out the gate. What are some of your memories of that roster?
Well, it was very interesting at first. Much like you said, it was a very green crew, and we were all sort of at that same level, you know, within a year of the business for all of us. And when you're trying to learn with other green guys, it becomes a little bit difficult. But for some reason, this group made it work, and we kind of strived through that with sprinkling in, you know, the odd veteran in here and there to kind of give a little bit of advice for people that were around a little bit more, like the Brian Jewels, and I know Bobby J, he was around there in the earlier days too, which is the whole reason why we started in the top rope after that.
We've had some other guests on the program that talked about, you know, that original crew. You know, Wayne had his guys that were trained by Saxon, but Don brought his guys in, and, you know, that caused a little bit of dissension with Wayne, a little bit of dissension with the locker room, because some of Wayne's guys were getting bumped for Don's. Do you have any recollection of any dissension that may have happened with Don's guys coming in and filling up those spots on the crew?
Well, I know it happened a fair bit where it was a lot of the guys that were there for Wayne were getting bumped and were getting kind of bitter about it. But, and, you know, it, unfortunately, it does happen to everybody. I remember one time, I think, myself and the Big O got bumped off of one card at Bumpers one time. And the funny thing is it wasn't even us who made a stink about it. It actually was Wayne who ended up getting who I was either Mike or Vance who was booking at the time. I'm pretty sure it might have been Vance, but I remember Wayne getting up in arms about the fact that the two of us weren't on the show and why the heck aren't we booked and et cetera, et cetera. And is you know how fueled up Wayne can get at times, right?
So were you put back on the show
immediately?
So this RCW crew of prospects and green kids to the business had a very short run because Wayne decided he wasn't making any money, or he saw an opportunity to make some more money selling the company, and he sold it to Ernie Todd and the Canadian Wrestling Federation. Where were you, and what were your thoughts upon hearing that that decision to sell to CWF?
Well, I was kind of on the fence on that because it was more so I wanted to just keep in the ring and what was going to be best for me, but because of everything that kind of went on there before I left and stuff and my whole ankle breaking and all that fun stuff, I wanted to kind of maybe steer away from that direction. But that's where all the rumbling started with Top Rope, because Bobby was another guy who came from over there that didn't want to go back over there due to whatever reasons he had. So I guess that's really where that small knit group of us stayed together, and we all started together and did Top Rope.
Did you have heat with Ernie for starting with Top Rope after your injury?
I don't think I did, but if I did, he didn't share it with me.
So Bobby announced he's starting up Top Rope Championship Wrestling. What kind of differences were there from working River City Wrestling, which was essentially your first regular gig, to working for Bobby J, who had a very active schedule?
The big difference would be the active schedule, like you said. Like with Wayne, we were, you know, maybe twice in a week, you know, every other week or so on, at least once, because we were doing every Monday. But then with Bobby, he started getting more venues and this and that. We were doing literally 3 to 4 shows a week for a good chunk of time. And that's where a lot of that, again, that same knit group where we gained most of our experience, where a lot of guys now, they're lucky to get 2 shows a month unless you're working for, you know, so-and-so, or you're traveling across the country like most guys do, right? So time in there is where we all kind of grew as a group too.
We've had some guests on the program that have talked about the locker room environment in TRCW. It got very clicky. You know, you had MVP, you had the junior heavyweight guys. You know, you obviously don't fit into either one of those groups. Some say it's the truth is stretched and it wasn't as bad as some make it out to, but some stand firm that locker room was politically fueled at all times. From your perspective, what was the locker room like? Was MVP politicking and running wild on the locker room?
Honestly, I don't know. know so much about the politicking end of things, but it was very clicky in the locker room in those days. Everybody kind of had their corner, and I know I was one of the guys in the middle that kind of gets lost in the shuffle from everything. You know, you're not in tight with the booker necessarily, but you're not in with the top clique, and you're just kind of, you know, foraging your way through things. But I don't know, overall it wasn't a horrible experience or anything, because we were doing a lot of learning more than anything.
Do you ever recall a time or experience with somebody's politicking that affected you personally?
Just gotta think offhand here where my politicking, I'd have to say a lot of that didn't happen until later on.
So TRCW, you guys are learning your craft. You're getting better as you go. Obviously, there's going to be some management changes, you know, during any company's tenure. Vance Nevada was the original booker for Top Rope Championship Wrestling, and then that book switched over to Mike Davidson. What were your thoughts on the booking change, and were you for it or against it?
You know what, at the time, I really couldn't be for or against it, just because, in general, I didn't really know what was going to happen with Mike taking over the booking and so forth. But again, it was after a while, I find much like a lot of the problems, when you're not buddies with somebody, you end up getting lost in the shuffle sometimes.
So, did you have a good relationship with Mike Davidson, or were you just kind of a guy that was on his crew that he didn't pay much attention to?
More the latter. I wasn't really much paid attention to, because, again, I wasn't the buddy-buddy with him, shall we say. So, we didn't always see eye to eye.
Mike Davidson, Vance Nevada, they're cousins. They have a very heated rivalry personally and online and things of that nature. We've asked this question before to guys who've been in that locker room, who've been there through them both. Who was the better booker for business? Was it Mike Davidson or Vance Nevada?
Better booker in between the two of them for business, I'd have to say honestly, was Mike in the end. Mike's ideas were a little more fresh and up-to-date. Vance was very much still in the kind of older generation style of booking, and I think what Mike did help everything.
You mentioned Mike's a better booker. If you talk to Mike Davidson, he's the greatest booker to put his pen to paper here in the province of Manitoba, and something he likes to boast about is the houses they would draw with Top Rope Championship Wrestling at the Palladium. You know, one of those being the featured match with Shane Madison versus TJ Bratt. 400 people packed the Palladium at a time wrestling was really hot. Was that Mike Davidson's booking that was drawing these people in, or was it a combination of other things or a combination of everything that was drawing that business?
I think it had a lot to do with just more so on the time. It was, wrestling was really hot at the time. People were really into it more so than they are now. It was also just a really good night where a lot of people would tell their friends all to come on out, you know, to come check out the wrestling. So a lot of the guys pushing people out, but I think it also, a lot of the guys' personalities really what drew in that house, because people wanted to come down and see more all the time. So, you know, the guys were busting their asses in the days of the lid where we were pulling in these people, but we wouldn't have been pulling these people in if we weren't sitting there and just literally trying to kill ourselves in front of this crowd to entertain them, to keep them back coming week after week after week, because as a weekly show, you know what I mean, to keep that kind of audience to keep coming in, it's a task in itself.
Now, business was getting hot, and when business is getting hot and people are coming to your shows, everyone takes notice, other promoters, other wrestlers, and it wasn't long after that a lot of guys from the Canadian Wrestling Federation that was still active and in competition with TRCW at the time. Some of their top guys started coming over to TRCW. What were your thoughts on the locker room being invaded by a handful of guys from the opposition?
That was another one of those interesting ones, because it was another one where everybody was kind of worried about where their spot was at that point in time. When you got a lot of these higher tier guys from CWF and stuff coming over, wanting to come be a part of what we were building. I know there was amongst a lot of the guys some animosity because like they weren't there from day one. But after everybody kind of started working with each other, we all realized, you know, it was kind of the best idea and the best for the crew type thing to have more talent influx to come in.
It was a lot of their top-end guys that came over to Top Rope Championship Wrestling. It wasn't guys scraping the bottom of the barrel. Was there any concern about losing your spot or being lost in the shuffle with the influxion of talent?
Yeah, I could say I was. You know, I know Owen and myself, we're always worried about that since we weren't usually high in favor with the office at most times.
So with things going so good, they were bound to come to an end. And after Mike Davidson got fired as booker, he had this grand idea of opening up his own promotion, which to this day still operates, Premier Championship Wrestling. You were given a call to be a part of their initial meeting where they were trying to recruit talent and pitch their vision. What are some of your memories from this first meeting?
It was kind of interesting, the first meeting, because it was the first time where I really saw it being treated more like a business than just a local independent promotion. Everybody was brought in, kind of, you know, nobody's dressed like a slob. We're in all in a board meeting. We have a legitimate businessman that's in here that's willing to invest money into this. You know, we all had a lot of hope in this, and there were a lot of promises made when PCW started, and a lot that obviously weren't followed through on. But in the end, again, they ended up pushing out another huge product.
You know, we've both had many promoters pitch us many big promises over the years, and I'm sure there was many made in that meeting. When you first heard these promises, were you skeptical, or were you just excited for this big opportunity that would be probably the biggest of your career up to that point?
It was a little of both. I was excited and at the same time skeptical, just because, you know, when you're going into something that's really unknown and you're starting from the scratch, from the ground up again, when you're just leaving a promotion that's like budding and booming right now. It's not like Top Rope was dying at that point in time.
So were you sold on the PCW vision after the initial meeting, or did you have to take some time to think about it?
I was pretty sold. I wanted to put down and try something new, just to maybe even just kind of further myself away from everybody again so I don't get lost in the shuffle.
So how did you go about telling Bobby and Vance that you were making the move to PCW, and what was their reaction to it?
Vance seemed more insulted than anything about it, just because it was literally like you're choosing sides here. But in my eyes, it was just what was better for me at the time. It wasn't anything personal with anybody.
The first big show in Winnipeg was at the Investors Group Athletic Center. It was headlined by Eddie Guerrero, the Honky Tonk Man, Brutus Beefcake. It drew 1,500 plus people, and you were put in a very key match on that show to wow that audience and keep them coming back and buying into the PCW product. That was a tables, ladders, and chairs match, yourself and Big O versus Assisted Suicide. What were your first thoughts when you were presented with this idea to be put in such a daunting task of a match in front of such a large audience?
Well, I was really excited at first when we got to the point where it's just like, okay, cool, I finally get to participate in one of these matches. Again, O and myself being childhood friends and stuff, this was something we've always wanted to do together as a tag team too, which was kind of cool. When we got out there, getting ready to go out and realizing how big that crowd was, like, I felt my nerves were just balling up underneath me, and I remember repeating to O constantly, you know, just tell me it's going to be okay when we go out there. Just tell me it's going to be okay. And that's all I could keep saying. And I was just so nervous walking out, because this is the biggest crowd I've ever been in front of at that point in time. And it was one of those just daunting things where it's just like, okay, just do what we normally do and just get it done type thing. But went in there, and I just, like, I don't think I could ever forget just the ovation and just the noise of the people when I came out of that curtain with him together, and just the giant pop out of the crowd.
So when it was all said and done, were you happy with the effort you put forth?
Said and done, it was I was a broken mess after. Had a number of accidents happen in the ring due to miscues and so forth. Had my knee dislocated. I was concussed, plus dislocated my hip, and then I believe I had a table fall square and hit me square in the middle of the in between the eyes and bust me open as well. And first time and probably only time ever I've ever had to have a referee legitimately help me into the back.
When it was all said and done, was it worth it?
Yeah, it was worth it, but would I do it again to that extent? Maybe not.
So shortly after that big event, you know, it became clear to the fans and the locker room that things were going to be able to continue on such a big scale, because it is very expensive to run an operation of that size. How soon after the big initial show did you realize maybe things aren't going to add up and these promises aren't going to be delivered for this big grand venture that they promised?
I I'd say it all kind of fell into place in the, within the first couple months, where it was kind of like, okay, well, you know, these extra promises just aren't going to fly just because it's just not happening. You're watching it week after week, and it's just like you're talking about these weekly things that were supposed to be happening, and it's just like you keep not seeing it. You start to lose faith really quickly.
One of the people that lost faith rather quickly in the company was one of the founders, Mike Davidson, who opted out of the company probably about 5, 6, 7 months into its first year. What were your thoughts on Davidson leaving his own ship?
Honestly, I wasn't really too fazed by it. Again, him and I never really saw eye to eye very much, so having him gone really wasn't going to bother me either way. I felt that, you know, somebody would take up the reins where we could maybe still do this and keep this ball rolling, because again, it is the guys in the end that are putting this show on. I know it's a lot for the guy to be planning the show, but in the end, it's still the performers out there that are keeping the people there.
So the person that did end up taking over the reins was Andrew Shellcross, one of the other founders of Premier Championship Wrestling. He was still very new to the business and was kind of learning as he went. Did you have a lot of confidence in his leadership as he took over the reins full time?
At first, it was a little bit sketchy just because, again, like you said, it was all that newness and stuff. But there was a lot of people throwing in the 2 cents in there, so I wouldn't say it was just necessarily him that was at the reins at first. I really don't think Andrew was fully just 100% in control until way later in the PCW years.
When was you've come and gone from the company many times. When was the first time you actually officially left the company?
Are we talking about PCW?
Yeah.
Okay, first time when I officially left there was probably 03, somewhere right around there. I was just getting really tired with the direction there and just didn't see anything for me to do. So I felt it's time to freshen myself up and go try to poke my nose in over at Ringmasters, which was just kind of a fledgling group at the time, but starting up. But I thought to myself that there were a lot of younger guys over there too, and just guys that didn't have the same like group of caliber of guys over there. So I thought a little extra talent over there would probably help something diversify their side. And ended up going over there for a short period of time there before actually coming back to PCW again.
So what are some of your memories of that original Ringmasters crew? Who are the people that you there's a lot of people in management. I know Angus was running it. It was rumored Easy was involved. Bobby Collins was involved. Who were the people running the ship and that you'd report to when you'd go to a Ringmasters show?
That was probably the most confusing thing to deal with, because again, it was you had 3 guys helming the ship, and you try to direct it at one person, but much like it always happens, it doesn't always necessarily travel down the chain of information. So you know, Angus may know, but then Bobby didn't know, and Easy didn't know, or Easy and Bobby knew, and Angus didn't know something. But there was a lot of miscommunication, unfortunately, in the management there. But I think that was probably one of the main reasons why Ringmasters failed in the end.
Ringmasters really burst onto the scene, puffing their chest out, boasting they were going to be taking the wrestling world by storm with this old school product they were putting together. They invested in a lot of nice equipment, championship belts, the ring. They were doing everything properly in terms of presentation. But there was more sizzle than steak, and they really kind of fizzled. They had these big aspirations to be running these shows, and then they got into the community clubs and weren't drawing so hot off the get-go. They were drawing very minimal, and soon after were charging $2, $3, $4 for tickets. How soon into the beginning of Ringmasters did you see that, you know, maybe this wasn't going to take off and live up to the hype and expectations that they were putting forth in the marketplace at the time?
I was over there for about, I'd say just over a year when when everything started to kind of piece together a little more. But that was, again, one of those times where I just felt things were getting stale again, so I wanted to freshen myself up again. And that's, again, where I jumped back over to PCW to kind of inject some life back into my character as opposed to the promotion there.
Why do you think the concept didn't work? What was flawed with the RME vision?
I don't think so much in the concept that was the problem, but I think it was just, again, more so just a lot of the miscommunication within the management, which was the downfall of the company.
you mentioned now you've done a lot of jumping back and forth to different companies to keep yourself fresh. I think you've probably been more active moving to and from promotions and back and forth to promotions than almost anybody in the last 10 years. What's the reasoning behind that? You mentioned freshening yourself up. Does it get to a point where you feel, you know what, I need to do something new? Or is it just a matter of getting out there and getting in front of a fresh audience, working with different guys? What is it about it that appeals to you to move around so much?
For me, mainly, it's also just it's a lot of the above there. It's getting in front of a new audience sometimes. Sometimes it's working with a new group of guys. It's a lot of the times, too, where you're getting lost in the shuffle because you're just, you know, not in the eye of the guy booking the show or whatever. So it's always, you know, keeping things fresh is always good for both ends, going and coming back. This way, if I leave a promotion for a little bit, I can always have the option generally to come back, because I'm generally not leaving in any sort of ill will generally when I'm trying to leave, because I try to leave on a good foot, because I never want that door to end up being closed, because again, you know what I mean? Never say never in the business, as we always say, right?
One of the companies that you were very influential in the early stages of was TJ Bratz Independent Wrestling Manitoba. What can you tell the listener about that product and its vision and how it was different than the 5, 6, 7, 8 different promotions that were running locally at the time when Brat decided to give it a go?
When Brat decided to give it a go, I'd have to say it was very well promoted. The guy's a promoter at heart. He pushed those shows till nobody's business. And again, I think that's a big chunk of why his success happened, is because he really pushed hard, like 24/7 for all of those shows. It was a different atmosphere to those shows. They were more bar show orientated, you know what I mean? There was a little more violence, a little more cussing, a little more blood, you know what I mean? And sometimes that's what that crowd kind of craved a lot.
Brat has a reputation of being one of the most off-the-wall, outspoken, erratic human beings to ever step foot in the Winnipeg wrestling scene. What was it like working for Brat, who has such a crazy and wild personality, compared to some of the other promoters you've worked for over the years?
You know what, honestly, I have never had an issue working for Brat. Again, I guess it probably helps that me and him are pretty tight in general. So I guess technically in this sense, I was in the upper clique of the management for a change. But I honestly feel that he treated pretty much everybody fair. I know there's a couple instances where that'll, I'm sure, be brought up about this or that. But, you know, I mean, nobody's perfect in that sense. But overall, I felt that dressing room was run very well, and the business in itself was promoted well. So there was always a house out there for us to perform in front of.
The Canadian Loose Cannon, is it wrestling or is it reality? you debuted with Canadian Wrestling's Elite very early on when we got started, but it wasn't as the German juggernaut Moses Luke. It was as a different character, Cyanide. Tell us a little bit about this character and how you came up with this concept and why the gimmick isn't around anymore.
It's funny because I was getting bored of doing just the same character I've been doing all the time, and it was always something I always had kind of had in the back of my head, was something similar to that, this almost deranged monk, I guess, character that I had dreamed up one time. But I don't know, I originally had the character made up for Rob Stardom and SPW. And I did literally one show or two shows with it, and I never heard from Rob again all of a sudden. But actually, you know what? Here, even funnier. The first time I used the Cyanide character was when I technically made my CWF wrestling debut. Later on in years, when I actually never worked for Ernie until one show at Wise Guys on Campus was literally where the Cyanide character started. And then it was no use for Stardom, so I came to you. And I thought it was probably the best option to do something different for myself.
And why do you not do it anymore? It was a good gimmick.
It was. I really did enjoy it. But again, it just, I kept getting told by more and more people, just name value when they wanted to throw it out there. I got told that by, well, I know Andrew was the biggest reason why I probably stopped doing it, was because when I went to go work over there, he really wanted to push me back as Moses because, again, it's the whole name value. Everybody knows you as this, blah, 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 and all that fun stuff. But, you know, it was fun while it lasted, I guess. And, you know, it's one of those things that I feel probably died too quick.
Does the gimmick still exist? Do you still have it?
Well, I still have it kicking around. But due to my weight loss, I don't think it's going to fit very well anymore.
So you did the cyanide gimmick, and at a time where a lot of PCW talent was defecting over to CWE in our first year, you're actually the first person to leave CWE and go back to PCW. What sprung that change, as the cyanide character was getting a lot of steam and was being pushed pretty heavy, and then you made the decision to go back to Premier Championship Wrestling. What sparked that?
What happened there was Brett and myself, like I said, we're pretty close. He was talking to me and just gave me a really good angle that was going to happen, and felt it was going to give me a bit of a pop, and I ended up making the decision to go back over.
And you made your return not too long after that. It was actually in a match that I talked about on this program. It was probably one of the worst matches of my life. you returned to CWE, part of the Alliance of Defiance, and it was myself and Zach Mercury versus two mystery opponents. And those mystery opponents would be yourself and Sabretooth. Yeah. And I was trying to tell the audience that I didn't have too much input on this match because I was busy running the show, and Zach Mercury kind of took it over at the helm. Could you maybe, because you were probably in the locker room a little more as this match was being put together than I was, explain what happened and where it went to shit?
I think it pretty much went to shit right off the hop. I don't think there's much explaining needed on that one. Unfortunately, you know, we had a big green guy in there with us as well. And then, well, Zach Mercury was in there with us. And you're running the show. So, hey, there's a lot of miscommunication in between us during that match. And it didn't hold up to standard, shall we say.
You most recently returned to CWE again after a sabbatical last year. What was your reason for leaving PCW this last time? And is it the final time we'll see you in a PCW ring?
It's the final time. You're never going to see me in a PCW ring ever again. I'll tell you that much right now.
What happened for you to close that door on your career?
You know what? It's not what it used to be, and it's honestly, I feel it's a dying promotion right now. It's at its point where it's not going to get bigger again, no matter how much CPR you give to it. It's a floundering fish that's just ready to die.
Well, there you go. You just went and caused yourself some heat.
Hey, whatever. I really don't give a shit. That's how it works.
So it's 16 years in the business that you're one of the longest, most, you know, for active performers, you got to be getting up there as one of the most experienced, most definitely. There isn't too many guys with 16 plus years experience still going. With accomplishing as much as you have here locally, what's the next step for Moses Luke? Where do you see yourself in the future?
Well, I don't see myself leaving CWE, that's for sure, again. But I'm hoping to get a little more traveling in coming up soon due to some life changes and stuff like that. I'm going to have some more free time on myself, so I'm hoping to maybe do a little bit of cross-Canada stuff in this upcoming year and so forth.
Getting back on the road.
I've been itching for it, and now that everything else is kind of lining up, it's that time for me to start hitting the road again.
Sometimes interviews can be a little too positive and a little too fun, so instead of asking things about who was your best opponent and your best matches, yada, yada, we like to go the opposite route, and for fun, talk about the worst matches and opponents people have had on this program. So if you had to pinpoint the worst match in your career in 16 years, who would get the nod?
Oh, see, this is actually a really tough call.
You can name multiple if it's a close call. We can go with a couple options.
Yeah, I don't know. There's a couple really terrible matches that I've been a part of where it's literally I was hanging my head in shame afterwards, but not truly because it was my fault. But I'd have to say it's a tie between wrestling plumber Lou Dooley at Bumpers. And one wonderful show outside of what is it called there? I'm trying to think of Northwood or Norquay. Outside of Norquay, wrestling the ever wonderful Pastor Jackson there, or Sidney Mance in there.
And what was so terrible about these matches?
Oh, my God. Where do you want me to start on this one? The factor that Sidney Manson probably should stay away from a wrestling ring is probably a good idea.
He's a big star out in Morden.
In Morden, that's great. That's super. let's call a spade here, you know what I mean? When you're in there, you should have some sort of knowledge of what you're doing. And unfortunately, he's severely lacking that. And the Carter Gleason / Plumber Lou Dooley match there, purely because I gave him a flying shoulder tackle and he broke his collarbone. And that surely amazed me because he didn't know how to bump from a hole in the wall.
Well, if you got many years in the professional wrestling business left, there's probably many more opportunities to top those two, I'm sure.
Oh, I really hope not, to be honest, not my career, because if I get another one of those, man, I don't know.
We like to end our program with a segment we call Ribs, Rats, and Road Stories. 16 years in the professional wrestling business. Let's hear some stories of ribs and rats from Moses Luke.
Geez, let me see. I got to think of a good story here, don't I?
Oh, you do. There's been some good ones.
Well, let's see. I remember there's a TRCW farewell show where I remember taking Dave Dixon's gear and taping it to the ceiling of the entire dressing room. That was pretty interesting. Let's see. Something a little more interesting than that. Well, I'm sure everybody's heard the stories of Mentolo in the closet with the video camera during a TJ Bratt and Rob Stardom performance.
I don't think that's ever been shared on this program.
Yeah, but let's just say a couple girls got taken back to a room, and Mentolo is an expert cameraman, A1, and can hide very quietly in the darkest of closets without being seen.
Wonder what that is.
Speaking of good stories, here we go. I got a good one that I remember from Franz's Bar out in Steinbach. We were out there for Bobby wrestling for Top Rope, and it was on a weekend. There were a lot of Americans up there too, from Minnesota and stuff, up fishing or something like that in the area. And there were a lot of these chicks in the bar. And I remember Woody was trying to get a booking with this one broad and kept trying to get back to the tiny hotel room that we had to change in. And this hallway at Franz is literally like maybe 2 feet wide. Now, at the time, I was still smoking full time, and I was begging for the room key so I could get my cigarettes out of my gear in the room. And then all of a sudden, it was just like, nope, nope. And then I kept getting saved for the keys. And then all of a sudden, into the bar comes Greg Roman and Mentolo, who are peering in the window of our hotel room and saying that Woody was in there with this American girl that he picked up in the bar. So, of course, as the wrestlers that we are, we all grouped together in the bar and said, okay, well, I think we should all go pay them a visit. So there's a big lineup of all the boys in the hallway, and Vance opens the door. I'm the first one in the door. And, of course, first thing I see is Woody buck naked on top of this broad, trying to lay still on top of her while he's balls deep in her. And I noticed my gear got tossed on the floor, which was literally right where they were. So, of course, at this point in time, being half cut and, you know, pretty close to inebriated, walk over to my pack of cigarettes. I crouch down next to her face. I lit my smoke, and I just kind of breathe in. Exhale there, I'm like, man, you must just be mortified right now. And at that same moment, I remember Shane Madison walking in with his vodka and orange juice and pouring it directly down his ass crack. The reaction there was tremendous because he was trying not to move to keep her from being uncovered in front of all these men. But then at the same time, he's wanting to squirm away and fucking smack him in the side of the head. But I remember leaving. We all left the room directly after that, and I've never seen somebody get into their bra and panties so fast and run down the fucking hallway with their clothes and hands almost just tearing. And it sounds mean laughing about it, but man, was that fucking funny.
Traumatized the poor girl. She's probably in counseling to this day.
Well, that's what happens when you come to Canada and book with a random referee.
Well, Well, that's going to wrap up today's program. Moses Luke, thank you very much for taking the time to join us today. I guess you'll be back in the ring for Canadian Wrestling's Elite May 9th, Holy Cross Gymnasium Hall. We'll see you there.
For sure.
Stay posted, www.cwecanada.ca, for more information on who's going to be appearing on next week's episode. We'll see you then.